This is Car Expert.
The Sorento globally is Kia's flagship, and being the plug-in hybrid, it's sort of like the halo of halos.
Now we're seeing all of these legacy OEMs rolling out more and more electric vehicles to try and corner this market that Tesla has really just taken the ball and run with.
Well, the year-to-date sales are the best that they've been since 2018, so the market's definitely rebounding.
G'day, I'm Mandy Turner. Hello, William Stopford.
Hello, Mandy Turner.
In mid-coffee sip. Hello, Jack Quick.
Hello. Hello again.
You seriously have the best surname for this business.
Thank you. I was born with it. I had to. I'm sorry.
Isn't it funny how, Will, half of your surname has, like, stop in it?
Oh, so it's like, no. Don't take me back to primary school, Mandy. All the jokes. Stop the Ford. Go Holden. Which, I mean, was apt because I was a bit of a Holden fan as a kid. But, yes, I got all of the jokes. So you can't really do much with your last name, Jack, because it's just already a word anyway.
No, I used to get it. I was like, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Or like, that was, yeah, if you haven't thought of that, you won't forget it now. I used to get that a lot. And then as another example, when I'd be like crossing the street, people would say, Jack, quick. And I'm like, yes, that's my name. So, yeah, I used to get it a lot in primary school. I can relate 100%. So.
Oh, wow. There is a lot. Mandy, anything you can actually do with your last name?
Well, I have turn in it, as in, like, turn a car. But that's about it.
Really? Stop, quick, turn.
Yes.
There we go. We make a great team.
Three amigos. It's always fun when we have friends and family come to us and say, hey, what car would you recommend? And it's weird though, every time they ask you, and you have to ask them questions back, okay, what's your budget? What's the segment you're looking at? Any brands in particular? What's your lifestyle like? And then they don't think about that. It's like, oh, hang on a second. Jack, I think your partner's going through this same thing.
Yes. So
what's happening with this?
When, as you were saying, when people come to me for like wanting to know kind of like what cars they could look for, I get really excited. I can't help it. It's like, oh my God, I'm going to have to get like 20 tabs open on my computer and have this, and this, and this, and this. And then it's usually like, nah, I just want to like a Havel Jolly on. And I'm like, no. No, this
every
is it.
Time, right?
This is it. I'm sorry. No, I'm going to have to unfriend you now. But no, my partner, he currently has a Volkswagen Golf Mark 7.5 Comfort Line with all of the packs. He has the sound and vision and also the safety pack. It's a 2017 model and it's kind of good prices at the moment. He and his maybe considering early stages, maybe getting a new car, which is exciting for me because it'll be
you
good
get to friend. Drive it.
Yeah, exactly. I get to drive and it'll look cool alongside my Jimny, whatever. And so in this age, he's considering like getting some sort of electric or plug-in hybrid electrified vehicle. And more recently, with the Polestar 2, it's been quite exciting. And so Polestar 2 and potentially maybe Model 3-ish kind of segment. But it's an interesting kind of time because I also recommended like the Serato GT, which I understand is completely different, but like in that similar kind of segment to what he has now, because he'd want something similar size. And then as a bit of a wacky kind of option too, I said the i30 N-line premium sedan. I don't know, about that was really enticing. It's just that little bit different. It really goes with my brand, which I think it'll look quite nice with the Jimny, just something a little bit different. But I'm not certain if it's anything's going to be happening anytime soon because a Polestar 2, although it will be coming towards the end of the year, I'm not certain whether my partner will be selling his car anytime soon. But there's good prices, so
yeah, it's a great time to sell a car. But it's not a good time to buy
a
car.
Exactly right.
So you might be like, oh, wow, somebody offered me a lot of money for my car. Oh, wait, but now I have to go buy something. And if it's new, I'm waiting months for it. If it's used, then prices are inflated.
Yep.
So I would just hold on to the Golf if I were him. Mm. Although he's talking electric. Has he considered the Hyundai Ioniq 5?
Yeah, well, I forgot to mention, but both myself and him, we really like the look of the new Kia EV6, in particular the GT line. I think that would be delicious. So when that comes, I'm really keen to take a look at it and potentially consider it. I reckon it'd be super cool.
Oh, my God, yes. Were there any cars that you mentioned to him, hey, you should consider this, and he just flat out said, hell no?
Anything Ford related is just a no to him. he reckons that it's just a little bit plain. I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but Ford is usually a flat out no for the most part.
I always find that so funny. People go, I won't buy a Ford. And it's like, well, you realize like every single Ford in the lineup is like, you know, you've got some of them are from Europe, some of them are from the States, some of them are, you know, they're all such completely different cars, but some people just have this blanket aversion to the brand, which I don't understand, having owned two Fords in the past and really wanting to have
very
a Mustang
similar with
eventually.
Kia. For me, it's just a similar kind of boat, just with Kia. It's just like, oh, I'm not going to get this. It's Kia, et cetera. So, yeah, I understand.
There's still a lot of people out there that don't realize just how closely intertwined Hyundai and Kia are. I met a woman, a few months ago. I don't know if I've told the story on the podcast. And she said her mechanic told her that Hyundai's great, yeah, put that on the recommend list, but don't touch Kias. And I told her, well, Hyundai and Kia, actually, they're part of the same corporate empire. They largely share the same platforms, engines, switch gear and everything. Blew her mind because here, this trusted authority to her was telling her something completely different. And, yeah, sure, maybe if you've rewound back to 1997, you'd be better off buying a Hyundai than a Kia. But now it's just like, well, which one do you prefer the styling of? So,
yeah. Oh, my God. There's a little thing called carexpert.com.au if she hasn't gone to that. God. All right. Let's get into this week's news. All right. We've been holding out for all this information for the 2023 Nissan Z. We've finally got the Australian details, Jack.
Oh, it looks good, doesn't it?
Oh, my God, it does.
So the Nissan Z, the Nissan's flagship sports car, is going to be coming in the second half of 2022, which is pretty cool. It's around the corner. And the Australian specs have now been revealed and confirmed. So there's going to be a single trim option and then the limited edition Z Proto spec, which is what was seen in the concept imagery with the cool bronze rims and all of the cool things like that. It's going to be on sale. We don't know how many is going to be coming of this limited edition, but it's going to be pretty cool. And all of them are going to be powered by a 3-litre twin turbo V6, producing 298 kilowatts of power and 475 newton meters of torque. So nice and fruity. Nice and like fun.
Yes.
And you'll get enthusiasts rejoice. You can get a 6-speed manual, or if you're feeling a little bit lazier, you can get a 9-speed automatic. I think I'd go for
it's
the
good auto. To have that choice.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's 100%. And
why would you go the auto, Jack?
I don't have an auto with my Jimny. I think I want something to balance out the, like, have nice fun manual Jimny for, I know it's kind of contradictory, but like have the manual Jimny for fun and then the automatic Nissan Z just for cruising.
For the daily commute. Yeah. Sensible.
So on the inside of the Z, there's going to be a standard 8-inch touchscreen with wired Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. And then there's also going to be a 12.3-inch digital instrument cluster. And as I talked about previously with the Z Proto limited edition, it's going to be getting 19-inch bronze forged alloy wheels, yellow brake calipers and interior accents, as well as the option to get the press image colors, which is Ikazuchi yellow exterior paint color, as well as with the super black roof, which is really cool. It really suits it. I don't mind it in the blue as well, but it looks really cool. I love it. And so it's now been confirmed with this new Z. It's going to have a 0 to 100 time of in the high fours, which is pretty quick for a rear-wheel drive car. Yeah, very much so. And then all Australian spec Nissan Z sports cars will be getting an electronic limited slip differential. Sorry, that's a bit of a tongue twister.
It is.
And launch control as standard. So in the US, they for some of the trim levels, they don't get this as standard, but everything that I just mentioned will be coming as standard on both the standard and the limited edition spec Nissan Zeds. The price isn't confirmed just yet, but I reckon it's going to be pretty competitive with the Toyota Supra. I reckon it's going to be close, if not maybe a little bit cheaper. I'm not 100% certain. I can't really speculate about that, but I reckon it's going to be a pretty top seller. And as I said, actually, there's not certain how many of this limited edition is going to be available, and it could be sold out by the time you get your chance. So rush into your Nissan dealership, run in now while you can, because as far as I know, they're already taking orders already. So get in now.
And as you said, this is now effectively Nissan's flagship sports car in Australia, because GTR is going as of November 1 because of the new ADRs. But I'll tell you what, this is a big jump up in power and torque compared to the 370Z. Mm-hmm. And I know it shares a lot with the 370Z underneath, where you can't see, but damn, where you can see, it looks good.
I know. I wonder whether we're going to get a Z Nismo.
I reckon.
Stay tuned for that.
Mm. I'm surprised that they didn't just have the normal Z and the Z Nismo and not the Proto. But maybe there might be three different ones. I don't know.
I just love that they previewed this car with a concept. They have released a production version that looks almost identical to the concept. Yes. Like, I think the only difference was like the parking sensors. And now they've got this proto spec that is, I believe, the same color that the proto concept was. So it feels like if you buy that spec, it's almost like you're driving a concept car. It's really awesome. I cannot wait to get behind the wheel of one of these.
Mm. Definitely. Okay, some big news this week. Will the 2023 Mazda CX-60 crossover SUVs coming down under?
Yes, it is. We don't know, though, how many of the other Mazda SUVs that were announced today will be coming here. So Mazda is actually adding 5 new SUV models to its global range before the end of 2023. And this is a little bit complicated, so let me walk you through this. So there's a new Mazda SUV that'll be on the smaller side called the CX-50. It's being designed for North America only. It's going to be built at a new Mazda-Toyota joint venture plant in Alabama, where Toyota currently builds the Corolla Cross. So we can just forget about that. I even mentioned the CX-50. It's not relevant. The CX-60 is what has definitely been confirmed here, and Mazda has also said that the CX-70, CX-80, and CX-90 SUVs could potentially come here. So the way to distinguish these, the CX-60 and the CX-80 go together. So these are like the narrower body SUVs designed for markets like Europe and Japan, where space is at a premium. The CX-60 is a two-row SUV, and the CX-80 is a three-row SUV. The CX-70 and CX-90, again, two- and three-row SUVs respectively, they're designed primarily for North America. So I believe all of these models will ride on Mazda's new large architecture, which is a rear/all-wheel drive architecture. Mazda is also rolling out a bunch of new powertrains. So I believe there's talk of a plug-in hybrid four-cylinder, which would be Mazda's first plug-in hybrid, correct me if I'm wrong. They're also developing inline six turbo petrol and turbo diesel engines.
Yes.
So Mazda is going a little bit premium here, because you'll remember just a few weeks ago that facelifted CX-5 was announced. So Mazda sees there's still some life in the CX-5. It's only a few years old. They've given it a little bit of a refresh, and that's going to keep running along. And then Mazda will introduce this CX-60 to kind of slot in above it, and that'll be coming before the end of 2022. Now, those inline six engines I mentioned will have 48-volt mild hybrid systems. So we'll just have to wait and see how many of these Mazda SUVs will come here and what will actually happen to the CX-8 and the CX-9. We're a bit of a weird market because the CX-8 is designed primarily for Japan. It's effectively a stretch 3 row version of the CX-5, whereas the CX-9 is it's a big girl that's designed for primarily for the North American market. So we've actually got 2 3-row large-ish, well, and one's definitely large, SUVs sold here. So we'll just have to wait and see which of the CX-70, CX-80, CX-90 trio is going to come here. Now, you'll remember Mazda, there was also a talk of Mazda introducing a next-generation Mazda 6 on this new large architecture. We have not heard anything more about that or its chances for the US, fingers crossed, because that would be really lovely. You can never say no to more rear-wheel drive sedans. But Mazda is yeah, this is very interesting to see what they're doing here, because instead of, and I'll talk about this a little bit in an upcoming article, instead of launching a separate kind of standalone premium brand like Hyundai has done with Genesis, Nissan with Infiniti, Toyota with Lexus, they're introducing these new premium products. They're going to slot above their existing models in the model range. Now, they're not, so far what they've said is they're not going to be targeting like BMW Mercedes pricing, but it's clearly going to be pricing and positioning that's a little bit higher than their existing core models, some of which, like the CX-5, for example, are going to continue to be sold alongside these new models. So then Mazda, if you recall, I don't know if many people know this, but back in the 1990s, during the, you know, the boom times of the Japanese economy, when all the car brands were trying ever more adventurous things. Oh, yes, let's have four-wheel steering and turbochargers and all of this. Mazda basically said that they were going to introduce a luxury brand, which they were aiming at the North American market because they're like, well, this will be really profitable. This will be lucrative. It was going to be called a Marti. At the time, they had been expanding their range of brands to try and match Toyota's multiple dealership networks in Japan. So they had Affini, AutoZem, Unos, and then there was going to be a Marti, which was going to be aimed primarily at the North American market. And then they yanked it because the Japanese economy was taking a nosedive. They were spending so much money on this. It was big for what was a relatively small Japanese brand compared to the likes of Toyota. And then Mazda's never kind of spoken about doing a premium brand again. They brought some of those, they brought some models here, which they badged as Unoses. They kind of sort of had them as a separate brand channel. But after about 3 or 4 years, they just folded them back into the Mazda lineup despite any overlap that it created, and then they just never spoke again about doing a separate premium brand. So now let's wait and see what's happening here, because we will recall Hyundai said, well, we're not going to do a standalone premium brand, we're just going to sell our Genesis and Equus sedans in Hyundai showrooms, and then a few years later, yeah, we're going to do a separate premium standalone brand. I'm very excited for this, and this is big news for Australia in particular, because we are a comparatively huge market for Mazda. Mazda is typically the number two brand here, and I cannot think of any other market where they come even close to being the number two brand. They're like a perennial also ran in the US, much to their chagrin. They're obviously behind the likes of Toyota and Nissan and all of them in Japan. So let's see how this premium push goes. I could talk about this all day. I've clearly spoken quite a bit already. Let's wrap this up for now. but yeah, look, stay tuned. Hopefully we'll hear more about these new Mazda SUVs soon.
Yes, I've actually quite liked it how they've been consistent with the model names as well. I know we've spoken about this in the past too, how it's been super confusing, but I think it's finally going to start making sense.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, remember this, the CX-30 was apparently called the CX-30 because CX-4 was taken by a separate unrelated Chinese market model.
And then
I think Mazda was just like, well, we've opened the floodgates to double-digit numbers. And then there's no rules that apply anymore because now there's the MX-30, which I know it stands for Mazda Experimental or whatever, but like, so this is going to be a little bit of a confusing time though, because you're effectively going to have like two similarly sized Mazda SUVs in a showroom, and dealers are going to have to explain, well, this is the CX-5. So it's like a RAV4 rival. And then this is the CX-60. It's a little bit more premium. So it's going to be
take
a little...
back what I said.
Yeah. It's going to be a little bit confusing. I'm glad you're on top of it, but a lot of other people might not be.
Wow. All right. Our next story, Jack, the Nissan Patrol 4x4 has broken a sales record. What record is this?
Yeah, so it's quite surprising, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, the Nissan Patrol has just broke the monthly sales target for being the top segment for its segment, the upper SUV, a large SUV, which is pretty cool. It's been around for a long time. It's a big thing. And it also has sold the most that it's during the month since its launch in 2013. So as I said, been around for a long time. And in September, it sold 700 units, which is pretty cool. So the Y62 model has been around since 2013. So it's a long time. It's had a few little tweaks and change, but overall, it's kind of the same. And a year-to-date figure of also 2,951 units. The reason why this is so popular at the moment is because there's no Land Cruisers around at all. So the 200 series is vanished. If there's anything at all, it's kind of dealer stock only, very limited, super high price. And people are thinking, might as well get a Patrol. Why not? Just think a little bit different, go for the petrol rather than the diesel. And it's also these sale figures are booming because the 300 series isn't available yet. And once it does, it'll only be dealer demonstrator stock most likely. 300 series won't be around for a long time, unfortunately, commonly on the road, I think. And there's also the main reason for this is just because of the impacted production. People are thinking, cool, let's get a Patrol. But Nissan says that it has good stock levels. So they're backing themselves up and say, yeah, there's nothing of everything else. Come and get a Patrol. Like, just come through.
They'll be rubbing their hands together, wouldn't I, Nissan?
I've already got the form filled out. Just sign your name and I'll just take $1,000 deposit. Like, that, I'm guessing that's their kind of mentality towards it because they're taking advantage of everything else not being available. And I think the main reason why this is kind of booming as well is all due to the lockdowns and people are gearing up towards going away. They want to go off and explore the countryside, get out of the city, go camping. And the Patrols and Land Cruisers and this kind of segment is the perfect kind of a highway tourer, and you can just cruise
and
for
good
miles.
Tow vehicle too.
Yeah, 100% for like caravans, for boats, you name it. It's the perfect car, although a little bit thirsty, I'm not going to lie, especially with this petrol V8. Well, I have a little bit of experience with the Y62 myself. My partner's stepdad used to own a chopped version. So what a chopped vehicle is. So they take the Patrol and they cut the rear end off it and they make it into a ute. So it was my partner's stepdad had a dual cab Y62, which was really cool. It was only for a short period of time. But it's super limited.
I've never
and exclusive.
Seen that. I've seen the dual cab ute conversions of the 200 series Land Cruiser, but I've never seen one of a Y62 Patrol.
It was pretty sick and it sounded awesome. I know that he had a modified exhaust on it and it's so cool. And had like a little short stubby tray and so you couldn't really get much on it. It's a lot more practical having the wagon body style, but I think it was just mainly for aesthetics. So super cool. And I think it was an early model. But anyway, I'll get back to the story. But it's kind of weird that this Patrol is having a sales spike as well because it's an old model. It's been around for a long time. And if you've seen the interior, it's not flash. Like it's just,
That's what's really frustrating is the left-hand drive version of the Patrol and the Armada, which is basically the same thing, sold in other markets, has got a new interior.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really nice. It's really slick, but we're still stuck with because being in a right-hand drive market, it just has not been tooled for a right-hand drive market yet, this new interior. So, but I understand why the Patrol is doing well, because as you said, Jack, you know, we can't go anywhere. So if we're stuck here and we want to travel around the country, you may as well be in a big, comfortable vehicle to do it. But also there's very little competition in this segment because we don't have Chevy Tahoes or Ford Expeditions here. And it's the Patrol, when you think about it, it's actually really good value for money compared to a Land Cruiser. Yeah, you're going to pay a little bit more in fuel, but it's typically lower in price, spec for spec, by a pretty sizable margin, especially considering how much Land Cruiser prices have been inflated lately. So, look, I totally understand why it's doing really well at the moment. Let's just see if it continues to do well once Toyota sorts out its Land Cruiser 300 series stock situation.
I think you should watch this space as well, because there's going to be a Patrol Warrior in the works as well, which is going to be super cool. So I'm Premcar, the guys behind the Navara Pro 4X Warrior. Got the little grubby hands potentially on Patrol, and it'll be interesting to see what eventuates from that. I think that'd sell pretty well too. I think a lot of people would be wanting that, a little bit of extra off-road gear, because the Patrol is really geared towards kind of on-road touring and towing, as we've already talked about. But that little bit of off-road upgrades would be really cool, I reckon. Yeah.
Yeah, I think your partner's stepdad would be down.
Definitely. And lastly, Will, speaking of, Tesla has broken a record podcast this week.
Yes. So Tesla says it delivered 241,300 new electric cars to buyers in the third quarter of 2021. So that's a new high watermark for the company. Wow. Previously, their previous record was 201,250 vehicles. Tesla also announced in a short investor statement production over the period totaling 237,823 cars across its factories. Look, we're seeing here, we've got Tesla production facilities in the US and China. They're building production facilities in Europe as well. These numbers are only going to continue to grow. And I noticed something interesting today. I was writing up some coverage for General Motors' electric vehicle programs because they're really ramping up their production of electric vehicles. They're rolling out a lot of cars on their Ultium platform. And I was looking for some data for this article. And there was an article that showed up in the search results from a few years ago that said, "Will Tesla beat GM?" And now you're seeing articles that say, "Will GM beat Tesla?"
Wow.
Because Tesla is number one in terms of electric vehicle sales in the US, and GM is aggressively pushing to get past them. But we've just seen over the years how Tesla has grown and grown and grown, almost to become like the default when people are talking about electric cars. And it's, you know, it was a pretty simple premise for the company. They said, hey, look, maybe not people who want an electric vehicle don't want something that just looks like some little commuter pod. Maybe they want something with really slick technology, something a little bit more upscale. And yet, they've done that. They've, you know, obviously released the Model S and the Model X, which were quite upmarket vehicles in terms of pricing and positioning. But now the Model 3, if we've spoken about this on the podcast before, a base Model 3 is in the same kind of price strata as like a Hyundai Kona Electric or a Kia Niro EV. And a lot of people are just going, well, those cars are fine. And indeed, they are fine. But why don't I get a Tesla? Yeah. And they're just everywhere now. Now, Tesla says about 96% of total deliveries were the Model 3 and the Model Y, which is a related SUV version that has yet to launch here. So the Model S and Model X are no longer as important to the brand as they once were. And to be honest, they are looking a little bit old, as much as I love the Model S. Yeah, look, Tesla is just growing and growing and growing, and now we're seeing all of these legacy OEMs rolling out more and more electric vehicles to try and corner this market that Tesla has really just taken the ball and run with. So, Tesla may do some things that aren't to my taste, calling level 2 autonomous driving technology full self-driving, for example, or the CEO that wants to tweet about everything and a whole bunch of media outlets that just want to report on everything he tweets. But Tesla does also do a lot of things right. And, you know, they're clearly kicking goals here.
It's funny you say how Tesla and GM, how that relationship has worked through the years. I wrote an article earlier in the week or late last week, something like that, where I was looking through like valuations of market valuations of Tesla and GM in particular, and GM's kind of throwing money, GM and Ford are just throwing money. They want to catch up to Tesla. They want some of that pie. And so Tesla has something or other billion valuation, and GM would have to increase their market valuation 10 times now to even equal what Tesla currently has now. And that's not like, so as Will said, GM is just throwing everything at it. They're saying we want like 30 cars by a certain date, and Ford is doing the exact same. I wrote an article on Will, you like this, the blue. I made a typo earlier today, Ants, but they're doing they're creating this big production hubs called Blue Oval City.
Not Big Oval City.
No, I accidentally called it Big Oval City. So one of their production hubs, one of three, is 3,600 acres. So it's huge. And so this production hub that Ford is going to be producing, it's going to be producing their upcoming next generation F-Series pickup, most likely electric, because there's also going to be a battery production hub there too, kind of like all together, kind of like a campus, which is really cool. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I reckon Tesla is just going to keep on going because, as you said, Will, as well, the Model Y isn't here yet. And when that does arrive, that's going to sell like hotcakes.
Paul was literally talking in his Instagram stories the other day about how he loves this Model 3, but he needs something with a little bit more room. And there are going to be a lot of people out there who would love a Tesla, but the Model 3 just, also the fact that it's a sedan, like why didn't they make it a hatchback? They want a little bit more space, and that Model Y is just going to gobble that up. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Ford, electric Fords, that's actually a really good segue into what I was going to talk about. Oh, did I steal your segue duties, Mandy? I'm sorry, you know, you get to do all the segues. Well, now it's my turn. Ford Australia is introducing at least 5 electrified vehicles by 2024. It's actually not saying what 3 of those will be at this point. It hasn't confirmed whether they're going to be regular hybrids, mild hybrids, plug-in hybrids, etc. But big news, we already knew that they were going to be introducing their first plug-in hybrid next year. It was supposed to be this year, but it's been delayed. And that is the plug-in hybrid Escape FEV. But they're going to be releasing their first electric vehicle here next year, which will not be the Mustang Mach-E. It will be the e-Transit. So an electric version of their Transit van. I know, not as sexy, but they will actually be the first in this segment in Australia, because this segment is full of electric options in Europe. But Ford Australia will beat them all to the punch here. It'll be available only in rear-wheel drive 420L long wheelbase configuration. It will be sold through Ford dealerships, and an initial network of 20 dealers will have the specialist equipment to be able to service it. But Ford is saying that will grow as demand and its range of EVs grow. So, I mean, this is not going to be the only EV. Stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. Pricing has yet to be announced, but it will be covered by Ford's 5-year unlimited kilometer warranty, along with an 8-year 160,000 kilometer warranty for the battery. Ford says, you know, they're bringing it here because they've always had a very strong presence in the commercial vehicle market. So if you're not familiar with the e-Transit, which was announced a little while ago, it uses a 68 kilowatt hour battery. So that's a driving range of up to 317 kilometers on the stricter WLTP test cycle. It's got a single electric motor producing 198 kilowatts of power and 430 newton meters of torque. So that actually makes it the most powerful and the quickest Transit that you can get here. So it's got a targeted payload of 1,616 kilos, gross vehicle mass of up to 4.2 tons. There's obviously been suspension tweaks and the like to accommodate the battery and to ensure that it can still carry heavy loads. Yeah, as I said, you know, you can get an electric Fiat Ducato, Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, Renault Master, etc. in Europe, but Ford will be the first to the market here in this particular segment. Because right now, if you want an electric van, you're looking at a BYD T3, or Renault Kangoo ZE, and yeah, they're considerably smaller vehicles. Yeah. So, look, no Mustang Mach E. I do feel a little bit sorry for the president of Ford Australia because the number of questions, we had a session that was open to media, and the number of questions and follow-up questions he got about Mustang Mach E.
Oh, really?
Yeah, look, he said basically it's sold out. That's the position that we're currently in, and the vehicle will not be available in Australia. We'll continue to investigate options. So I dare say Ford Australia is trying. You know, they would love to have it here because we're about to get Hyundai Ioniq 5. We're about to get Kia EV6, Tesla Model Y. This segment, which was non-existent, is now absolutely booming. The Mustang Mach-E has been getting really good reviews. And most importantly, unlike models like the Maverick, F-150, Explorer, etc., there is actually a right-hand drive version. So they sell this in the UK and Ireland. So the tooling is done, but there's evidently so much demand for it that Ford Australia just cannot get its hands on it. So look, there has still been no movement on the Mustang Mach-E. I think we wrote an article 12 months ago saying still no plans for Mustang Mach-E. Hopefully in 12 months' time, we won't be writing another article saying still no plans for Mustang Mach-E. Ford has kept its options open in terms of it said at least 5 electrified vehicles, which could mean friggin' anything. So by 2024. So look, I don't know. Maybe they might finally find some availability for Mustang Mach-E in 2023. But yeah. As it stands, no Mustang Mach-E yet, but an electric Transit, so
it's just as good.
Yeah, it's handy.
Yeah. That wraps up this week's car news. It's that time of the month where we get last month's sales figures out and about. It's called VFACTS, and we're going to look at September. Hello, Mike Costello.
Hello, Mandy Turner. How are you?
Very good, thank you. How did we fare last month?
Pretty well, actually. So, you know, stock shortages, price increases, the continual COVID chaos that we keep hearing about, none of them were enough to halt the growth in new car sales across Australia for the month of September. So VFACTS data compiled by the FCAI showed that just over 83,000 new cars were recorded as sold last month. Generally, that means vehicles that are actually delivered into the hands of customers, which is up 21% on the same month last year. To put this into context, that September 2021 tally is lower than September 2019 and 2018, so it's not exactly back to its pomp, although year-to-date sales are the best that they've been since 2018. So the market's definitely rebounding, and the general sense is if there was even remotely adequate supply on the ground, then it would be even higher because demand is through the roof.
I'm interested to see how the Ranger and the Hilux is going head-to-head in number one and number two. Who came through?
Yeah, it's a foregone conclusion, a formality that those two will be number one and two now. Just like it used to be Commodore Falcon, now it's Hilux Ranger. So it was again, and the Ranger got the gloating points, or the bragging points, I should say, with 4,192 sales, whereas the Hilux, 3,635 in second. Both are well ahead of the third-placed Toyota Corolla. Now, we know that Toyota is very short on stock at the moment, so there's every chance that the Ranger could claw the gap down, and by the end of the year, it's a very, very realistic chance that the Ranger could even overtake the Hilux, which would be the first time we've had a Ford being the top-selling car in the country for a whole year in, I would say, decades, yeah. Without having done the background research.
God, because he'd be almost doing copy and paste every single month, wouldn't he? Yes, Toyota again. It's
some of it is. Some of it really is. There's, you know, every so often a couple of facts grab you each month, but generally speaking, it is the usual suspects. And so it was for brands. We see that Toyota, with an all-time September record of 20,216 cars, up 56%. As I said, suppliers are starting to get thin now, so it sold probably more in September than it was thinking it would be able to, and now you're looking at waiting up to 9 months for some of its key cars. Mazda held on to second, despite being the sole top 10 brand to go backwards, edging out Ford and Hyundai in close succession, and rounding out the top five was Kia. And then finishing off the top 10, Mitsubishi, Volkswagen, Isuzu Ute in eighth, and that was up a huge 102% and has now overtaken its previous full-year all-time record only 9 months into 2021. So Isuzu Ute, one brand that's dominating. Another brand is the ninth place MG. That Chinese company is up 94% for the month and is now well and truly ensconced inside the top 10, which means Nissan and Mercedes-Benz sat outside the top 10. So two big brands couldn't quite scrape in. Brands that grew their sales above the market average included GWM and Haval, both part of Great Wall Motor. LDV, so the Chinese brands, all going really well. China is now a bigger source of cars than Germany for us. Jeep had a huge month, up 65%. Lexus up 90%. Peugeot up 200%. Their ships certainly came in. And good old SsangYong up 140%. We're hoping to get some clarity around that brand's future very soon. Honda down 45%. The new agency model that we've spoken about at length on the site possibly hasn't got off to the start Honda hoped it would. Porsche, BMW, Renault and Mercedes-Benz, as well as Audi, were all down for the month. So not a good month for the premium Germans. And then when we look to models, obviously Ranger and Hilux, top two, rounding out the top 10, Corolla, RAV4 and Prado. So four of the top five sellers were Toyotas, which is just a staggering result. You know, one in four cars sold was a Toyota last month. Sixth place, Hyundai i30, Isuzu D-Max in seventh, up 64%. Toyota Camry, Mitsubishi ASX, and the Mazda BT50 rounding out the top 10. So those two twins inside the top 10.
Wait, the BT50 beat the Triton?
So not only did the BT50 beat the Triton, Will, but everything beat the Triton, including the GWM and the LDV, because supply is just so bad. Wow. And, you know, the Triton, it's a car that is getting sort of sales are being nibbled away by the new Chinese brands coming in from the bottom. Very limited supply. Newer models higher up, you know, in the form of the D-Max and BT50. So it's sort of being set upon on both sides as the poor old Triton. But once the ships start to arrive again in the next few months, I'd imagine those numbers will start climbing again.
Can you give us a segment breakdown, please?
Yeah, so if we look really macro, we see that SUVs were 49% of the market, light commercials being utes and vans 24%, passenger cars 22%. That's quite a different split to what we would have seen 5 or 10 years ago. We delve in a bit more on that and we see that 4x4 utes were the number one individual vehicle segment. So 17.4% of the total pie. Medium SUVs close behind, led by the RAV4 and CX-5, just under 17% share. Large SUVs and, you know, cars like Prado, Everest, MUX are all just selling their socks off at the moment. Nissan Patrol had an all-time record month in Y62 form as people look to have that big, you know, family getaway in lieu of the international travel. You know, these cars are just flying off the shelves. Small SUVs, 13% share, and small cars, so the Corolla, Mazda 3, i30, etc., 11.4%. So those top five segments equate for about three-quarters of all vehicles sold.
And finally, any little random facts that you found out last month for us?
Yeah, so it's always good to see the growth of alternate fuel cars. So electric vehicles up nearly 200%, 190% to 466. And that's not including Tesla, which still doesn't give us sales data, although we know that Tesla is far and away the number one selling electric vehicle brand in this country. It's not even close. And then the MG ZS is the number two. But we've got a whole glut of EVs coming, beginning with the Polestar, which launches in the next few weeks. So 2022, that EV sales curve is going to grow exponentially. We also saw really strong growth from plug-in hybrids, up 140%, and normal hybrids too, up 61%. So for me, that was the real story of the month. The other one is just looking forward. We know that suppliers are starting to get thin on the ground. They have been for quite some time. People are waiting up to 9 to 12 months for a lot of the most popular vehicles on the market now. At some point, I just don't see these month-on-month growth figures continuing. And I think you're going to see particularly Toyota sort of fall away a little bit over the final quarter just because it doesn't have cars to deliver into people's driveways. So I expect when we come on and talk about the sales figures for next month, we may not be quite so positive.
Yeah. All right. That full report, if you want to go into even more depth, is live at the site now. Thank you, Mike Costello.
Always a pleasure.
Hello, James Wong.
Hello. team. I nearly said hello guys, and I always forget that like Mandy's not a guy, so not in a mean way.
I feel like I've been called a guy every time I've been working for Car Expert, so I take it as a compliment.
You can edit that bit out.
Now tell us, what family sized SUV have you been traipsing around in this week?
So I've been out in the new Kia Sorento plug-in hybrid, which is a pretty important vehicle for the brand. It's basically the top spec Kia Sorento, so the GT line, and they've shoved in a big battery pack and an electric motor, and now it can do most of your daily commutes only on electric power. So I think what's really big news about it is obviously the fact that it's the first electrified Sorento, so they're going to be bringing the plug-in hybrid, and then they're going to be bringing the hybrid next year. So in about 6 months' time, Kia will have petrol, diesel, self-charging hybrid and plug-in hybrid versions, which I believe it is the only car on the market in Australia that actually offers all four of those powertrain options. Some other companies might have like petrol, diesel and plug-in hybrid, but most of like the European brands, for example, which are pretty prevalent with plug-in hybrids, don't normally do like a self-charging version, because in Europe it's very important to lower emissions, and plug-in hybrids do really well in lab tests or official testing, so they might emit like as little as 40 grams per kilometer of CO2, which is, you know, one quarter of the equivalent petrol or diesel car. So the plug-in hybrid's already been launched in Europe. We're one of the few markets outside of Europe and the US that will get it, because even in Korea, I don't think they sell it there. They only sell the normal hybrid. I would actually like to for you guys to guess, because I don't actually think the three of you might know how much you think this car is.
I'm abstaining because price? I know.
Oh, okay. I would say maybe 65.
That's how much the diesel. That's a little bit less than what the diesel is.
Okay, Jack, your turn.
I'm pretty certain I know the answer too, but I'm going to say a little bit less than 80 grand.
Yeah, it's still a little bit off. So they're launching it from 81,990 drive away.
Wow, it was way
off. So it's Kia's most expensive vehicle ever. Well, so far anyway, because I reckon when they bring out the EV6 next year, there'll be versions of that surpass that. So the Sorento globally is Kia's flagship, and being the plug-in hybrid, it's sort of like the halo of halos. And we've gone through the Sorento range quite a bit since its launch last year. So we already know that it's a very good car. It drives well. It offers pretty decent 7-seat accommodation. 5 seats is more than spacious enough, but it's got proper 7-seat capacity compared to some 5+2-seaters. And it also offers a really good spread of trim levels and powertrain. So this new electrified version, while it's quite a step up from the diesel, it's about $14,500 more than the equivalent diesel. It's actually still priced in line with some rivals. So, and it actually puts into perspective actually how cheap the normal one is, even though you can't really find one at the moment. They're in really short supply, so they're about 8 to 12 months wait on some variants. So this plug-in hybrid is actually priced cheaper drive away than a Kluger Grande hybrid is in Victoria.
Wow.
I checked it out on the Toyota configurator recently, and I think a Kluger all-wheel drive hybrid Grande is just over $82,000 drive away once you factor in, because they only do recommended retail. So Kia's sort of taken the hit on some of the on-road costs. So even though it's expensive, it's about line ball with a top of the range Toyota Kluger or Mazda CX-9. And even though it's a little bit smaller, you basically get this really high-end powertrain that they claim can do up to 68 kilometers on electric power only on the older NEDC cycle. But realistically, you'll get between 50 and 60, depending on the kind of driving that you do.
So how does it drive?
Really, really nicely. It'll tend, like most plug-in hybrids, it'll default to its electric mode most of the time. It can drive up to about 130 kilometers an hour on electric mode a alone. So even if you have freeway stints and things like that in your daily commute like I do, so my route to the office in Melbourne is probably about 23 kilometres, about 15 to 18 of that is on the freeway. And then the rest is going down some of Melbourne's busiest roads like Punt Road as you come into the CBD. So I drove it most of that week that I had it, just going to and from the office on alternate days. And then some extra time was spent on country highways by some colleagues because our filming location, for example, is quite a bit out of Melbourne. So it's about a 200 kilometer round trip. So the fuel consumption it's an interesting concept, which I'll sort of get to in a bit. But the way it drives is really nice. It'll drive like an electric vehicle most of the time. So if you drive under 50 to 60 Ks a day, you basically won't turn on the engine at all. So it's very smooth. It's very quiet. You get that little bit of a whirring noise that you hear from some electric vehicles. And unlike something like a Kluger hybrid or some other plug-in hybrids or hybrids that we know already on the market, the transmission is actually mounted in the electric motor, I'm sorry, actually is mounted within the transmission. So as you drive, regardless of whether you're on electric or petrol power, it sort of shuffles through gears and you can actually feel it and you can hear the noise. It's almost like you can hear the ratios change even if it's in electric mode. It's something that I experienced in the Niro, the Kia Niro. So I think it's just something that Kia does basically.
That's but bizarre.
It actually is a bit bizarre when you first try it because if you're used to electric vehicles, it's a single speed transmission normally. So it's almost like a CVT. It's just a very progressive linear acceleration experience. Whereas this, it sort of drives like a normal car, but it's got but you're not hearing any engine most of the time. So yeah, for the driving that I was doing as a daily commute to work, I could go to the office and get back home without actually really turning on the petrol engine at all. The only time it would come on was occasionally if it's a cold start. It sometimes does it to heat up the engine a little bit, or sometimes if you need to give the throttle a stab to get up to freeway speeds or whatever, it'll fire up the engine quickly to give you that little bit of extra power because combined power output's 195 kilowatts, whereas the electric motor alone only has like 50 something kilowatts, but there's quite a lot of torque there. So It actually was a really, really nice drive. My memory of the petrol and diesel Sorento is that they're still quite nice, but with the diesel, you still get that little bit of a diesel rumble, whereas this was so silent and it feels like a much more expensive car in the way it drives compared to the combustion powered versions. And obviously the economy is great. So in that daily commute cycle, I was seeing, you know, under 1 liter per 100 kilometers, or, you know, no more than 2. So if you charge it every night and you are driving, you know, you live within 25, 30 kilometers of the city and you're just driving to and from work most of the day, you'll rarely visit a petrol station. It's just when you get out into these country driving environments like what Paul would have done to go to the video location, where you start to see it creep up into the 4s, 5s, maybe even 6s, because once the battery's depleted, obviously, it'll just act as a normal hybrid and then shuffles between the two power sources. And because it's carrying a little bit of extra weight, it's about 140 kilograms heavier than the diesel. You're carrying around a bit more weight, and the petrol engine, or the transmission, should I say, only has 6 speeds, not 8. So I think the engine's probably revving a little bit higher at speed. So it's obviously an urban-focused vehicle, which is where most people are probably going to drive this car anyway. But I was very, very impressed with how it drove. And the ride is actually better than the V6 and diesel GT line versions of the Sorento because it's riding on 19-inch wheels rather than 20. So it's the same design that you get on the Sport Plus variant rather than GT line. And just that the tires are marginally skinnier and the sidewall is a bit thicker. So you get a little bit of an extra level of compliance in the ride, which I think really helps smooth it out. I think when Tony Crawford did the launch review and then when I reviewed the diesel shortly after that, I think we both complained that the 20-inch wheel package is a little bit on the firm side. So when you're just putting around town or whatever, you pick up a lot of smaller imperfections in the road. It's not uncomfortable, but it's a little bit busy, whereas this one is a lot smoother. And I think maybe that extra weight helps it settle a little bit. And Mike Costello actually was conducting a direct comparison between the plug-in hybrid and diesel Sorentos the week that we had the plug-in. So we sort of cross-checked notes, and that was sort of the consensus. And we'll be able to you'll be able to read more about that when he sends it live in the next couple of weeks.
This is a bit of an interesting one because the Kia Sorento has obviously got one of the longest waiting lists in the business. But we've seen plug-in hybrids. People in Australia just kind of don't really understand what the benefits of them are, or even what plug-in hybrids are. And we've seen that with Mitsubishi saying, hey, look, we've been the market leader in, with plug-in hybrids, but we need to revisit our marketing because people don't seem to understand. Has Kia said how many of these plug-in hybrid Sorentos they think they're actually going to be able to sell here? Do they expect it to
I did pose the question. So I had a roundtable interview with a few Kia executives, and the news stories out of that will be live at about at the same time as the review. I did ask the question because obviously the main barrier, they did tell me supply was going to be tight because the hybrid and the plug-in hybrid, one reason they haven't launched it here sooner is because the same factory that manufactures these cars for us manufactures the hybrid and plug-in hybrid for Europe. So while the US gets its has its own plant in, I think, Alabama,
Georgia.
They produce – there you go. thank you for correcting me. But, yeah, so the Korean factory makes it for the European market, which the hybrid and the plug-in hybrid actually make up the bulk of the range there, and they only sell one version of the diesel and no other petrols, whereas here it's the inverse. So – they didn't say explicitly if there was a number or a cap on the initial allocation, but they said that ongoing supply will be tight. And obviously, due to the price of it, they're not expecting to sell a heap. So they basically said they can't, they don't have any firm projections that they could communicate, mainly because it's really just up to how the vehicle is received when it first gets to market and then the supply situation from the factory going from there.
All right. Well, as JY said, there's going to be plenty of news stories on that, and the review will be live right now at carexpert.com.au. James Wong, thank you.
Thanks, team.
There goes another podcast. Hey, Will, you've been driving two very different cars, the Audi SQ2 and the Mazda MX-30. What were your final impressions on these cars?
Yes. So I think I mentioned to you earlier, Mandy, one of these cars I thought I was going to really enjoy, and I have not enjoyed as much as I thought I would. Another one I was prepared to be pretty down on and have actually ended up quite liking it. And you said, don't tell me, save it for the podcast.
Sure, should we take bets, Jack? Or has he already told you?
No, I have no clue.
Which car do you think I was pleasantly surprised by out of the Audi SQ2 and the Mazda MX-30?
I would say the Mazda.
No, I was going to say Audi.
All right. Oh, okay. It's
the Mazda. And look, and I'll try to be brief here. I always thought the MX-30 was a bit pointless because Mazda introduced its first electric vehicle, which really not that impressive in terms of range and certainly not that cheap. And then they go ahead and put a mild hybrid internal combustion powertrain in it, which just seems a bit weird. You know, it's just like Nissan saying, oh, well, we're going to do a diesel Leaf now. So I was pretty prepared to be down on it also because it's a little bit pricier than a CX-30 that it's related to, and it's obviously less practical because it doesn't have four full-size doors. It's got those little freestyle doors. However, as much as I wanted to be down on it, I've been driving a little bit over the past couple of days, and I've got to admit the basic goodness of the CX-30 shines through, and it's got a kind of a funky style of its own. I guess if you think of it as being more like the relation between like a Hyundai i30 and a Veloster, for example, for years people were buying coupes, which don't really make any logical sense when you think about it because you're often paying a premium to get less practicality. So people are paying a little bit more than a CX-30, which I think the difference spec for spec when you're talking about the mild hybrid is like $2,000 between the two. I could be wrong about that. But you're getting a very distinctive looking car. You might not love the way it looks, but others will. And the interior is a little bit funky. It's quite refined. It's nice. I wouldn't buy one. No. I wouldn't, but I get why somebody would. Yeah. Now, keep in mind, I am talking about the mild hybrid, which is, again, not a hybrid as much as Mazda promotional material seems to suggest that it's a hybrid. It is a 12-volt mild hybrid system. So this is not exactly a Toyota-style hybrid here.
12.
But it's overall a nice car. If you set all of that kind of baggage aside that I've kind of attached to it, it's pretty good. The electric version's value proposition is far, 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 far worse. Now, the other car I've been driving is an Audi SQ2. And I thought I was going to like this because I've been driving a lot of Volkswagen Group products lately. I was in a T-Roc not too long ago, which is kind of vaguely similar in concept in terms of like size and packaging, etc. And I really quite liked it. So I'm like, oh, it's Audi SQ2. Oh, what's this? 0 to 104.9 seconds, you say? It looks nice. It's in bright turbo blue. I knew it was one of Audi's older products. I know the SQ2's kind of just come here, but the Q2's are getting on a little bit in years. But no, thank you.
Why?
It was really quite disappointed me because a lot of Audis I've been in lately, I've been pleasantly surprised by. Now, I'm not the world's hugest fan of dual clutch transmissions because you have to change your driving style, everyone always says. But I've been in plenty of Volkswagen Group products with dual clutch transmissions and haven't experienced just the annoyance that I've been having with this SQ2. There's just this lag off of the line, whether it's the turbocharger spooling up, or whether it's the dual clutch transmission kicking into gear. But it does not feel anywhere near as fast as that claimed 0 to 100 times suggests. When I first picked it up, I was commuting around town, taking it from the Audi dealer down to the office, and it was just that dual clutch vibration all of the time. And it's such a cute little package. I mean, the interior is, frankly, the interior that should be in a Volkswagen T-Roc, which has not a very nice interior. It's probably one of the few Audis lately I've actually been disappointed in. So, yeah, it just doesn't feel as zippy as you would expect it would. And I've heard the same thing about the RSQ3, that it's got really impressive performance figures and just doesn't feel as engaging on the road because you've got that lag. I want instant gratification.
That's really interesting, Will. Are you doing a comparison between the two?
No, they just happen to have them at the same time. And I think I think Tony has been driving an Audi SQ2 down in Sydney. So let's see what he says about it. His opinion might be different to mine. It was sensational.
This is the greatest car in the world.
You wouldn't, for your money, you wouldn't buy anything else.
Oh, God.
Sorry, Tony, if you're listening.
Oh, he never does. We probably should wrap this baby up. Will, can you give us a rundown of the cars briefly that we've got coming up next week?
So I believe we've actually got some Hyundai Ioniq 5 activity coming up soon. So we'll finally get to drive one of those. So I believe driving impressions won't be published for a little while, but that is really exciting.
Yes.
It looks like the comparison, I think Moko or Scully mentioned a little while ago, between the Staria and the Palisade is happening next week. So really interesting, MPV versus SUV. In Melbourne, there will also be a Skoda Octavia Limited Edition. Nice. BMW X1. Lexus RX 350L Sports Luxury. In Sydney, we've got a Hyundai Palisade. Oh, I'll have one of those following week. And an Audi RS5 Sportback. That sounds an Audi that's more my speed. Here in Brisbane, we have been having some dope cars lately. So really excited. ATCO right now is behind the wheel of a GR Yaris Rally, GLS.
Oh, yes.
I will be swapping that SQ2 for an RSQ8.
What? Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, so I probably won't be complaining next week. A Lexus LS500 as well. Spoiled. But excitingly, Albors will be getting a chance behind the wheel of a Porsche Taycan Cross Turismo. Now, ooh. I went for my first passenger ride in a Taycan Turbo S yesterday, and I was told, all right, we're going to go from a standing stop, put your head all the way back against the headrest, because it's just going to – and he was preparing me for that, all right, oh my that it was God. Going to be, like, neck-snappingly quick. And even prepared – I was giggling like a little girl. Like, it is just instantaneous. Really? It's like you expect all the stars to, like, you're going through hyperspace or something. It and I've driven Teslas before, so I don't know why. Like, but it was, yeah, okay. So
another level.
Yeah, and the Taycan Cross Turismo is a wagon version of that. Like, that's, yeah. So for once, Brisbane has some really, really cool stuff, and Melbourne Fantastic. Should be a little bit jealous. Not that we do have a little inter-office rivalry.
We can't drive anywhere anyway, so.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks. All right, if you have any feedback for us at all, our email is podcast@carexpert.com.au. Jack Quick and William Stopfall, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mandy.